Welcome back to Texans House. Drew Doherty, John Harris with NFL royalty here in Dick Vermeil, longtime head coach of the Rams, the Eagles, the Chiefs. Got a Super Bowl ring as well. Coach, you're in town. You excited about the game? What is the best part of coming to a Super Bowl now that you're not coaching in one?
Well, the best part about coming to Houston is we sell good wines here. This is a great city.
It is.
It really is. I don't think Houston gets the credit for the quality of the city. It really is. But coming here for the Super Bowl, I haven't been to a Super Bowl game physically since the Rams lost to New England. And what was that, 2002?
Yeah, 2001 season, yeah.
And I stay home and watch them. And have a group of my former players come over, and we watch them together and enjoy it. But I'm excited about being here because it's going to be a fun game, and it's a great stadium in a great city. So just coming over here today, you can sense the city has taken in.
There's a definite buzz.
Yeah, real buzz.
I would imagine, Coach, now you went in different iterations. You went 80 with the Eagles, then you came to 99 with the Rams. Yeah. I would imagine over that time frame, the Super Bowl changed pretty significantly. And then obviously today you have all this going on. How have you perceived that to be? I would imagine in 1980 there wasn't a whole lot going on, even though it wasn't New Orleans.
No.
What was that experience like the first time you went when it was when you took the Eagles to the Super Bowl?
Well, at that time, obviously each year the hype of the game has grown.
Yeah.
There's no question. It was the Super Bowl was the biggest thing in the world at that time. But in relationship to how it is today, it's like comparing the horsepower of a great Cadillac in 1980 to the horsepower in the Cadillac today.
Yeah.
It's just magnified.
Yeah.
And all, I mean, this city, even if it was 1980 and had a Super Bowl here, it would be alive, but not as alive as it is today.
Yeah.
The media has done a great job of promoting our game through the Super Bowl, really.
Yeah.
It's almost unbelievable how it's grown in proportion to where I first entered into it.
You talked about watching the game at home. I always wonder this when I talk to coaches, former coaches, et cetera. Do you watch it as a fan, or do you watch it and say, okay, they're in this set, this is what I would do? Do you watch it as a coach? How do you watch the game?
A combination. If there is a coach coaching on the teams that I know well, I watch it more as a coach.
Yeah.
If there's nobody on either staff that I know, then I watch it as a fan because I normally stay in touch with all my coaches.
Yeah.
And by really studying, I have something to talk about.
Yeah, of course.
In regard, because they're working their butts off and I'm loafing. So I have something concrete to talk about. You know, why are you doing this? I would think you might be better off going this way with it. But when there's nobody on the field that you really know personally, then I'm a fan.
Do you get amped up? Do you get angry, or do you still stay clinical?
I get upset with officiating.
Does that ever change?
I get upset with commercials.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they slow down the momentum of a team that's got something really going, and all of a sudden it's not one commercial; it's a series of five of them. My God.
How big of an adjustment was that for you when you came back to the Rams after being out for a little bit?
Well, you know, you don't notice as much as a coach as you do, I think, maybe as a fan when you're sitting there watching it. Because you got something going on, you're talking to coaches, sometimes you almost relish a little more time to talk to somebody.
Sure.
But I think it's getting a little too much for me today anyway as a fan.
Yeah. Coach, I always think about this because I stopped coaching in 2000. I've been away from it. People ask me all the time, would you ever go back? Would you ever go back? You got into broadcasting after you left the Eagles, and you were in that, I think, for about 14 years before you went back.
Right.
So I've always wondered this. Why did you go back to coaching at that point?
Why didn't I go back?
Why did you go back to coaching?
Well, you know, I missed it. I missed it badly. And I had turned down so many opportunities to go back in from people. I'm not bragging about it, but I had some wonderful opportunities to go back in over those 14 years, and I didn't do it. But when Georgia Frontier and John Shaw talked to me about the Rams, I knew how sincere they were, because I was a young assistant when Georgia and Carol Rosenblum took over the Rams. And every time that job was open, I was offered that position to be the head coach, and I didn't go. And then here comes 1997, and they offered it to me again, and I said to myself, you know, if I don't go now, it's over. I will never go back, because no one's going to offer me a job at 60-something years old. So I took it, went back in. Wow. And I'm sure glad I did.
Any regrets to that point? Because 2 years later, my favorite show is America's Game. And I love watching the story of the 99 Rams, because they tell the story of the 97-98 Rams, where you guys were not very good. Yeah. But you had to go through a transition of coaching a different type of athlete at that particular point. How tough a transition was that, going from coaching athletes in the 70s and 80s to all of a sudden having to coach in the late 90s, but you finally got it right and obviously got the right group in 99?
You know, I never really noticed any difference. The kids in the NFL want to play. They want to be successful. They want to earn good contract, and they want to work. So I have never really noticed any difference between the older guys. And I know this, the newer guys were bigger and faster and were making more money, but superhuman beings. And, you know, I look for a specific personality and character within a player that we kept on our roster. So everybody was a good example to the other guy. And, you know, and I just I never felt a problem there. I had to adjust myself because the game had changed some. It's far, far more wide open. Hell, yeah. We thought you were chicken if you didn't run the ball 40, 45 times, right?
Of course.
Yeah. Now they run the ball 30 times. They think, holy mackerel, that's a lot of runs.
Yeah.
But, no, so that part of it changed. And the volume of what you do, the amount of offense you go into a game plan with, magnified 10 times to what when I, we had a Dirty Dozen running plays. Okay, we call it the Dirty Dozen. I don't give a damn who we're playing. You're going to have to stop these 12 running plays.
Right.
And it had a package of passing stuff. And we varied it from week to week. But this is what, in the NFL today, the packages are so huge. Our greatest show on turf with Mike Martz running the offense and Al Saunders, the Kansas City Chief.
Yeah.
You cannot believe the amount of offense we went into the game with.
Well, the other day, Kurt Warner took a picture and put it on Twitter of one of the game plans.
Yeah.
And it just went on and on. It was amazing. It was incredible.
Let's hope Kurt Warner goes in the Hall of Fame tonight. I'm sure pulling
absolutely.
I wanted to ask you about him. From your first impression of him, how long did it take until you knew this guy was something different?
Well, we signed him in a workout. Mm-hmm. A friend had asked us to give him a workout and sign him if he was close to being okay, and then send him to Germany to play in the NFL.
The world.
Because guy was coaching that team, and you could sign a player and then send him to the team. So we were going to do him a favor. We worked him out. I liked the workout. Was it spectacular workout? No, but I liked it.
Yeah.
And then we bring him. We send him to Europe. He plays well. 10 games, he plays well. We bring him back in. We put him gone. He was our third quarterback. And he did a good job. He did a good job. And it was borderline going to make it. I just liked him. And then not running my own offense anymore and being the head coach of – I was standing and watching everybody all the time, but I'd watch him throw the ball against our defense every day because he would be the opponent quarterback. And I'd say to myself, either our defense is lousy or this freaking kid can play. But then your thought is, you know what your next thought? You were a coach. Your next thought, oh, he probably can't do that on Sunday.
Right, right.
Oh, never. That's not doing it against the Ravens or the Patriots. That's against our team. He's a scout team quarterback running pass patterns off a card.
Yep.
So then we make him our backup quarterback, and there was a big decision and controversy in that too. But I just had a feeling. And the day that I made him our backup quarterback, I passed him in the hallway. He's going one way, and I'm going the way. He's our quarterback. And I stopped him. I says, Kurt, you know something? There's something about you I really like, and I can't wait to find out what it is. Honest to God. He'll tell you the same story.
Yeah. What did he say back to you?
He thanked me. He's very humble. He's still very humble.
Yeah. Very
but,
much so.
You know, could I expect him to play like he did when he took over for Trent? No. But I thought he would play well enough for us to win.
Yeah.
The fifth game of the year, we're playing the 49ers.
Oh, yes.
They had beaten us 17 times in a row. We're ahead 21-0 the first quarter. And every pass he throws is, I mean, unbelievable. Two or three touchdowns. To people within a pattern that he hadn't seen that coverage on the practice field.
Right.
Did it. And I remember turning to Jim Hannifin, a legendary offensive line coach, and I said, Jim, this kid can play. And
he
from
could.
Then on, after that game, you asked my squad. I went in Monday. We're 5-0. I walked in there. I said, guys, we're really lucky. I'm going to tell you why. There's only one freaking team in the National Football League that can beat this team, and they're all sitting in this room.
Wow.
If we just keep doing what we're doing, we're going to win it all. And I stayed with that attitude the whole year, and they made it come true.
Yeah.
And that team had to believe it because the two teams before
it
were not very good. You struggled
those
first.
Won 9 games in 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, and for them to hear that and get over that that hump,
that
I thought was huge.
But what they did know is they knew how hard they worked to get to that third
That's
year.
True, absolutely.
See, you can't work like that anymore.
No.
The collective bargaining does not allow you to have 2-3-hour practices and pads on a day.
Yeah.
You can't do all those things. But we developed some real good football players. Kurt Warner would not get any reps in a practice today.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's shorter practice. It's all governed by the league. Shorter OTA, shorter off-season program. You don't get enough time sometimes to help a kid develop.
I just remember seeing him develop in the Arena League.
Oh, yeah.
We'd watch him with that helmet that had the goggles, the Iowa Barnstormers. That's where we saw him. Coach, you're in Houston. You got so many things going on. You talked about wine earlier. That obviously is it's a business you've been in for a long time because your family was in that, but you've continued on with the wine business. How is that wine business going? You got a lot of events in Houston.
It's never good enough. We're not ready to make the playoffs yet. You know? But Houston is – we don't make enough wine to distribute it wholesale around the country.
Right.
Houston sells more wine through Specs Distributorship.
Yeah.
And Rodney Brown, the director, but I call him my wine offensive coordinator. We sell more wine here than we do all the other cities in the states combined, except for the Napa Valley. We have two tasting rooms in the Napa Valley. And we turned a hobby of making 150 cases of wine into a full-fledged business in 2008. Now we're making about 3,000 cases a year. We're winning awards. I've been to two wine dinners the last two nights, one at Lakeside Country Club, then Breyers Club last night, and everybody loves the wine. Now we just – but a little guy can't sell too much of it wholesale. Because the profit's not enough. So you've got to sell about 20 to 25% wholesale and the rest direct market.
Yeah.
What's your favorite right now?
My favorite's a Cabernet.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we really are, a Cabernet family, because the vineyard has got strong Cabernet grapes. My great-grandfather used to own part of the vineyard years ago. So,
what do you pair it with when you're eating? What's the best thing to eat it with?
You know, I'm not hung up. I drink what the wine I want to drink and make the food match it.
That's a good point.
Well, Coach, we really appreciate the time. We could keep going on with you, but we got to cut you loose. Yeah. Thanks so much for being here.
For your time.
Best of luck with
Houston's
the wine
great
business.
City.
Coach, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
It's the great Dick Vermeil.